Hello and welcome to Concert Pipeline. I'm Steve Jones. Today on the program, we have a fun one. If you like to laugh, you came to the right place. So Concert Pipeline doesn't do a ton of comedian interviews. You know, we do mostly music, but the comedians do concerts too. They do live shows, right? So Joe Gatto is coming through the Bay Area, Northern California to be exact. He's got a couple of shows. He's playing at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco on September 28th. And he's playing at the Crest Theater in Sacramento on October 1st. So a couple of great shows. I'm hoping to be able to make it to the October 1st show and check him out at the Crest Theater. He's freaking hilarious. He's just one of the funniest guys. Impractical Jokers is, I don't know if I use the term guilty pleasure because I don't feel guilty about it. I truly enjoy Impractical Jokers and their humor and their friendship and how much they really care about each other and have grown together and kind of been on this voyage and just do anything they can to make each other laugh, right? And have a great time. And they built this really empire on True TV over the past 10 seasons of the show. Joe Gatto did step away from the show a season ago, but to no ill will, he's still really good friends with the other guys in Impractical Jokers, and he's doing his thing, right? So he's doing his thing, being his solo stand-up comedy tour dates around the country. And he's got an extensive list. He's playing shows everywhere. His tour seems to never be ending. He does a couple shows a week. I think he probably flies back to home to be with his kids and his number of dogs. Oh, we'll talk about dogs. And gets to find that balance. And it's so cool that he's doing this thing for himself. So really, really excited about bringing Joe Gatto in. I got to say also really excited to share next week's episode of Concert Pipeline. We have Princess Goes on the program. That is Michael C. Hall's band, Michael C. Hall from Dexter, 6 Feet Under fame. We had a really great chat and excited to bring that to you next week. So, this week we're throwing in a bonus episode for Joe Gatto, and I'm going to make it my mission to make him laugh. I think it'll come pretty naturally because he's just such a positive, down to earth, cool dude. But again, I don't get a chance to interview many comedians, and getting to keep on pace with them and really kind of connect is going to be a new fun experience. So. We'll get into that here shortly. Before we do, just kind of catch up on what's going on in my life a little bit. The kids are busy. The kids are keeping me really, really freaking busy. They're at my house every day, and I get very little time without them, which on one hand is great because I love them so much and they're incredible. But there's not a lot of time to myself. I'll just say it, right? And so my son, just a couple weeks ago, started taking up gymnastics. And then we decided to throw Cub Scouts on there as well. So, and they're back to back. Right now he's taking gymnastics 1 hour on Monday afternoons. And then the next hour he's in Cub Scouts. So we have to do a whole freaking Clark Kent thing, get him changed into his Cub Scout uniform quickly after gymnastics ends, because we got 5 minutes to get over to Cub Scouts. We're always late. And so I'm trying to figure out if I need to move his gymnastics date to a different day so that he can have some separation between the two, but it just really works out better to have both on the same day. So it doesn't conflict with my daughter's gymnastics that she's doing. So he's really into gymnastics so far. I mean, he seems to be enjoying it, because that's the one that I'm like, we can kind of cut this. I think he's going to get more from Cub Scouts than he will from gymnastics, including making some new friends that I'll have here in town. And be able to invite to his birthday party next month and all of that, right? So so I'm juggling all those things. I got my son's gymnastics, my son's Cub Scouts, working on the work for Cub Scouts outside of gymnastics time as well. And there are events every weekend, apparently, that you could go to if you choose to. We're not at the point of being that invested in that yet, but I think we'll get pretty heavily invested and take on more as we can. And then my daughter's gymnastics, and she has 2 days a week. So that doesn't leave a lot of time for other activities. And so doing those activities is is great. It's enriching, and I'm glad that he's actually taking on new activities this year because he didn't last year, really. And so it's a good opportunity for him to keep us busy. I'm also counting down the days until duck hunting season starts, which is less than a month away now. I'm really excited about that, and getting out and being out in nature and hitting some birds. It's going to be brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm training my dog to be ready too. If you've watched previous episodes, I've kind of unpacked a little bit about the challenges I've had with my dog Navy and her not being good with loud sounds. We've overcome a lot of that. I actually took her to a trainer a couple of weeks ago. He gave me some tips, which I ran with, and I bought a bumper launcher, which a bumper is like this toy that like is it really replaces the duck in practice rounds, and a launcher that you use a 22, and so it gives it force and is going to shoot it like 100 yards and launch it, and we worked closer. I worked with friends and even my daughter and having them shoot it off, and we got to the point where they could shoot it and I could shoot it right next to her with her sitting there. And then she takes off and chases the bumper, is super excited about the retrieve. So I'm getting her really on board to do some training there. And then I'll be working her hopefully in the next couple of days toward being okay shooting off some rounds and with her right next to me as well. So I got a plan and I'm getting her comfortable and she's doing super, super great with all of the training that we have to get ready for duck season. I don't think I'll take her out right away in duck season. I want to really just kind of get myself back in check in terms of having a couple of hunts where I'm able to focus on the birds and my craft of of getting out there shooting some ducks. And then in November I'll bring her out when it slows down a little bit and get some training in. But I'm super excited to train her and have her be a part of my hunts. And subsequently, I might be able to take a kid or one of my kids out for a hunt sometime. They've never been out with me hunting, and I would like to take them out sometime. They've never shown great interest in getting out and doing it, but both of them are really attached to my dog and want to be part of her learning process and her being out there. So if she goes out, one of them might go out with me as well. It's just getting them up early enough to actually do the thing, right? So that's what's coming up in my world. Got some exciting times ahead. Looking forward to getting out with buddies, enjoying the great outdoors, really getting it at this point of peace. There's a peacefulness to being out there also where you can just relax, not have any stress or anything, not worry about work and everything else that you got going on in your life, and just be one with the nature and watch the sunrise. I mean, I love watching the sun rise out in the marsh. It's incredible, and I always try to take sunrise shots, but I don't get a lot of time to do it because that's the time when the birds start coming in, and if the birds are flying, I don't want to be messing with my phone. I want to be enjoying the moment. I want to be connecting with those birds and really honing into my craft because I'm still learning and growing in that as well. So, lots of fun stuff. All right, I don't want to waste any more time. We got Joe Gatto on the program today, and I'll reemphasize again, and I'll call it out later. But he's got a couple of shows here: Palace of Fine Arts, September 28th, Crest Theater, Sacramento, October 1st. If there are tickets for those shows, there's not many left. He's doing really well out on his tour and doing his own thing, and I'm hopeful to see him. So let's go ahead and let's bring Joe Gatto in on the program. Joe, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. First off, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You got it. You got it. I had a little bit of a thing I had to take care of and I pushed it off, hopefully by it could wait till after we're done.
Well, I appreciate you prioritizing this thing over that thing. So
You got it, bud.
how's your day treating you so far?
It's good, man. How's it going by you? Where are you? Are you in California?
Yeah, I'm on the West Coast, just outside of Sacramento.
Oh,
So
nice.
Yeah, hope I know you're coming this way here pretty soon. So you're
Can't
going to be
wait. Yeah, this
playing,
weekend I'll be out there. Yeah.
San Francisco, playing Sacramento. So
Yep.
yeah. Do you have any
Got
fun
to show
memories
I got to
of?
show the Bay Area some love.
You got to, and you've played here before, of course. I
Of
saw you
course.
with the Jokers, I don't know, 8 years ago or something, probably,
Yeah.
when you played San Jose. But
San Jose. I've been back out that way in the Bay Area one time after that with the guys. I haven't done it solo yet. I haven't done San Francisco or Sacramento solo, so it's gonna be a good time.
yeah, how's the tour going? You have an endless amount of dates, on the
There's
tour.
an
You
endless
don't
amount of
stop.
people to laugh, man. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that need to giggle. So I'm doing the good work out here. It's good. It's going well. I mean, I had the summer off, which was awesome. So it got packed on both ends. So when you look at it, it looks a little crazy. But when you think about it, I had like 2 months and a couple weeks off, which was great to have time with the fam and take care of business. It was nice. So
Yeah, so you'll play a couple shows and then you'll travel back and get to be with your kids and then do a couple more shows and kind of find that good balance, huh?
yeah, it's a great balance now, actually, because I'm not working at home anymore. Don't have to watch cuts of a TV show or, write or make notes or any of that stuff. So it's just, I whittle it down to one crazy career instead of like two or three.
Yeah. Are you focusing on any other writing, or
Yeah.
you're wanting to produce and do some of the other kind of behind
Yeah.
the
I
scenes
have a
stuff? What
script. I had a script I've been working on that. I'm shopping around, but because of the strike, everything, we're hit the pause button. But I'm always writing. I love that. I have a kid's book coming out, which I worked on during COVID. And so now we're in the illustration phases of that, which is so much fun. And my podcast, Two Cool Moms. So me and Steve Byrne have been doing that, which has been so much fun. And I love that format, and that way to interact with the fans has been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
keep busy.
I've heard the podcast. It seems like you just have so much fun doing that. And how did that come about?
Steve's the best. I've been friends with Steve for, over 10 years, and we always wanted to work on something together. And then when my schedule opened up and something that we wanted to do, he always wanted a podcast, so did I. So we tried a couple different formats that didn't work, and then we found this format of Two Cool Moms, because we had always found out we were talking about our mothers a lot, and we always actually went to each other for advice. So it was funny, and then we just started talking about it one day over lunch. And it was like, oh, we're two cool moms, because we had two cool moms. So basically the format of the show is, we talk about anything and everything in the beginning. It's a comedy podcast. We talk mostly about our upbringing, being parents, our mothers, or any tangent. And then we spend the second half of the pod answering fan submitted dilemmas and solving them to the best of our abilities, which is normally pretty good. We have a pretty good success rate, but it's not always perfect, but it's always funny. So
Yeah. Well, people come to the right people for advice, right?
that's
So
right. That's right. Yeah. So we've had some big news with that. We took the summer off to do that. Now we're rebooting it now under a pretty big platform. So we're excited.
yeah. And so tell me about your mom and kind of growing up and kind of how did she inspire you? I understand you had a lot of like comedy in your family. Your family just loves to have fun, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. My mom was a firecracker, man. She was 5 foot nothing, batshit crazy Italian woman who just loved me more than anything in the world. She's the best. I talk about it a lot in my stand-up show. Her influence on me. But she was like, when she walked in the room, she was an electric. Everybody gravitated towards her because they knew they'd be smiling and have a good time. She had a great optimism, great personality, which I think I embody pretty well. She was super kind. Always there to lend an ear, lend a dollar, do whatever she could to help. She was super sweet. So I think I embody Jerry Gatto as best I can. And yeah, it was just, she's great. And growing up, she was a strict mom who put a lot of pressure on us to do great things. And I think that we succeeded with a lot of it because of her love and support. She always supported my dreams. She was always proud of me. She passed away at the beginning of the second season of Jokers, but she got to see the premiere, and she was like a peacock, when my boy's on TV making people laugh. So it was really sweet to have her do that. So
Yeah, and she got to see you start out, so that's huge, right?
yeah,
So
for sure. For sure.
tell me about when you started kind of making the tenderloins. Like, were your parents really supportive then too? I'm not sure. I
Yeah,
know
my
your
father's
dad.
already gone, but my mother was. We used to rehearse in my mom's basement, and she used to like find excuses to come down, like, and do laundry or whatever, just so she could listen and laugh, and we'd hear her laughing and stuff. But she was always a huge supporter. The boys call her Mom Dukes. She was like everybody's mom. She was great, and she always supported and came to the bad improv shows that we had in the beginning, told her friends about it. And when I wanted to move to LA to chase a dream to be a screenwriter, she was very understanding of that. Came out to visit me a couple times, checked in with me, and was like, you know, is it, how's it going? You know, how's it going? She gave me 3 years. That's what she said. She said, how long are you going for? I said, I don't know. She goes, well, you have to give yourself a time limit. She said, you have to give yourself a time limit. I said, okay. So she said, 3 years. I'll give you 3 years and you have to come back to me. And we left. And then I moved back after about 2 years and a little bit, because my grandma had passed away and they had become widows together. So they were like two peas in a pod, you know, and they were together for like 10 years after my grandfather and father died. And then when she passed away, I came home for her funeral and I was hugging my mom and I just said, maybe I'll just come home for a little bit. She's like, thank you. And I just started crying. I was like, okay, I guess it's time to come back for a minute. And then when I came back, you know, reconnected with the guys and really took comedy to the next level because we were together a lot, inspiring each other, moved to sketch comedy online, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I like that she gave you that timeline, and that seems like a pretty generous timeline. I'm actually reading Kevin Hart's like memoir right now, and his mom gave him 1 year to get it done. But when you feel that pressure, right? Like you just work that much harder.
Yeah, you need a finish line, right? Everybody needs a finish line. You can't just be running. You can't be running around without a direction. I think it's good. And, you know, I try to do that myself too. Like if I'm writing a script, I'm like, all right, you have to have the first draft done by, and I'll open up the calendar and be like, by here. And I'll just do that, you know, or if I'm, you know, even with my kids too, like, it's like, I said, I want to teach, I said, my son this summer, he's got to learn how to swim and ride a bike. So I said, July, we're riding a bike. August, we'll learn how to swim. And we did both of those. And it was good. And he was on board with it too. I was like, this was the month. It's August. And he's like, we learned to swim. Like it was really fun. So
those milestones are so huge. You know, I have two kids of my own, so I feel it. So tell me about finding your voice from like a physical comedy side, because I mean, you, I think more than any of the other jokers are, physical comedy is like a big part of your jam. How did that come about for you?
It's my forte. I grew up loving it. Big fan of Mel Brooks. I don't know if you can see behind me. I got the Young Frankenstein poster there. Huge fan of Mel Brooks, his comedies, his movies, slapstick. You know, growing up, I was all about like pratfalls and stuff. I used to love the way, you know, people use their body for comedy. You know, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Leslie Nielsen, you know, all these physical gags and things of all those types of movies. I grew up a comedy movie more than stand up. I was more into comedy movies. And that was really like a big part. Like, but even like Looney Tunes, The Muppet Show, like things of that nature, like I really just laughed out loud at those kind of things. And my body's funny. I have a funny body. So I ain't afraid to use this comedic weapon that the Lord has blessed me with. You know, so I think it's always been a gift and I just love it. You know, I just love having that in my arsenal of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's huge. Have you always had an incredible number of dogs? Like, have they always just been a part of your life?
No, I had one dog growing up for 17 years, 16 years. I had a dog Midnight. We got when I was one, passed away when I was 17. That was the only dog I had growing up. We only had one dog. We were one dog house. Then Bessie and I bought our first dog, Cannoli, about 8 or 9 years ago, 9 years ago at this point, maybe 10. And we bought Cannoli. And then within a year, had spent like $4,000 treating all its problems because it was a kennel pup. And it really just opened our eyes to the whole problem. And we were like, this is not right. So we started just adopting dogs. We adopted our first dog, Biscotti, who's my favorite. Don't tell the others. I think they know though. So like I had, you know, we adopted Biscotti and I just started being like, oh wow, that we could actually do some good here. It felt really good. The love of a rescue dog is unparalleled. They have such a rough life and it was like, we could do it. So we just started collecting dogs on our own. And then through the pandemic, it got a little out of control. And we were like, you know, a lot more dogs need more help. What could we do? So we decided to start Gatto Pups and Friends, which is our non-official nonprofit out here in New York. It's a rescue on Long Island, which we run the sanctuary at our home. We have an adoption center in town and it's been great. You know, we've just did our 42nd adoption yesterday, adopted out our 42nd dog. So it's been, instead of just collecting them, we're actually trying to find them forever homes, which has been really good.
How many are in your home at any given time?
We have like the Gatto Pups. There's like nine that are our dogs that we won't really give away, you know, that aren't ours. But at any point, you know, between, if they're in the hospital, if they're old and have passed away or got adopted, you know, it ranges anywhere from 20-ish dogs that are running around, 20 to 5, I guess, you know, that are need homes and we're working on getting homes out. But we've been on a good stint right now. It's more fun when more get adopted than die, because then you start feeling bad. It's like, but that's the game. You know, we do mostly senior dogs. These dogs only have a little bit of time left. So we're just giving them some love and cuddles before they go out, you know? So it's hard, but it teaches your kids about life and death pretty easily. So
yeah. And you build a connection. You need to FaceTime with them sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. My son, you know, not too long ago was like, hey, he saw a picture of my mother and was like, oh, he's like, that's grandma. I was like, yeah. He goes, oh yeah, grandma. And he was talking to his sister. He goes, yeah, that's, she's dead like Zeppeli. And Zeppeli was one of our dogs that passed away. So we just putting them together.
They're just all dead.
One big melted pot. Yeah.
One thing in your live show that I saw on your TikTok was you did this thing, and I don't know if it was just a one-off, but it was awesome, where you kind of put this couple together.
Loved it.
It was brilliant. Tell me how that came about.
So we had a lot of fun when we get to these cities. I walk around town, hang out, like it's fun to be part of. I love a Main Street. I love to support local businesses and bakeries, of course. So I'll grab my coffee, walk around, you know, a local pastry and whatever. And when we got to the venue, it was an orchestra pit that wasn't raised. So there was just this big space between me and the first row. It was like, you know, 20 feet or so. And I was like, that's a big space. And so I was with Jiggy, who is my tour manager and my opener. He's great. And I said, we got to do something. This is too weird. And I was like, you know what? Get me a table. I said, and we'll set up a date. And then it just started spiraling. And then we were in town early. And I was like, and the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, it'd be really funny. I was like, you know, it'd be really funny if we like made it dinner. Like if we just grab a single guy, single girl. I was like, I'll grab dinner. I said, we'll serve them food and wine. And I was like, we need somebody to serve them wine. And one of the guys that works for me, I was like, go get a tuxedo in town. So he called at the local tuck shop. He said, hey, Joe Gatto's in town. They're like, oh my God, we love him. He's like, we'll trade you 4 tickets for a tuxedo. They're like, absolutely, come in. He went and got fitted. They gave him a tuxedo. And then I was like, oh, it'd be great if somebody could play the violin. And the security guard was like, well, the orchestra was here last week. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, the local orchestra was here last week. They did a performance. He's like, I know the concert, the leader. He's like, you want me to text him? I was like, yeah. And then the girl was a fan who played the violin, and she came with an extra violin and gave me the violin. So then she came out. It just all worked out together, and it was really fun. And I like to think in my mind that those two are married now. they're dating. He was perfect. She was great. And it was a really nice guy. And they actually, at the end of the show, they came back at the meet and greet. And they said, oh my God, it was such a fun date. I was like, good. It's better than being a third wheel. So,
nice. Well, you know, you got such a great story. You got to tell your kids if that does last, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, this is how it's done. And just the joy. I mean, the joy that you bring to people all the time, Joe. I mean, it's such a positive energy. And I mean, like, tell me about a fan encounter that you had that really meant a lot to you.
Yeah, I mean, the meet and greets are unbelievable because it's a time where, you know, everybody knows that the past couple of years have been really hard on people, myself included, you know, and everybody's going through something. So just these stories that I get from people backstage of here, I mean, there's 5 to 10 every night that take my breath away that I'm not that person. I am that person for people, you know, that I can make them laugh and smile again. You know, I hear forever, you're the first time I've laughed, blah, 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 and that stuff. So it's just more like, it really just is like, it feels like a duty in a way. I live to make people laugh. I say that all the time. And it feels like this is what I'm meant to do, no matter what the medium. If it's not TV, now it's out live, movies in the future, who knows what it'll be. But I'll just always be out here to serve, I think. Because I generally enjoy it too, selfishly. I think it's important to, you know, it's a good job to have, you know, to make people happy. So I've had so many fan encounters, but one of, you know, some of my favorites are, one of my favorites is like, people always think like that I'm filming a hidden camera TV show. Like I was in Target. I tell the story. It's so funny. I was in Target and there was an older lady that was working at Target. And I was like in a rush and I needed to find like where the paper towels were, but you know, Targets are huge. So I said to the woman, I said, excuse me, where are the paper towels? And she was at the other end and she looked and she goes, looked at me and goes, oh no, 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 you're not getting me. And she walked away from me. And I said, I'm sorry, where are the paper towels? She was like, no, Joe, I know who you are. You're not getting, and she started running from me. And I was like now running, chasing this woman. Like we're on other sides of the aisles. And I was running down one side and she was running down the other. And I was like, excuse me, where are the paper towels? She's like, yeah, no, no. I was like, do you think I just brought hidden cameras into this Target, set them up to get you? It was so funny. And it's like, I get that all the time where it's like, oh my God. But now my kids are kind of doing it, which is bad. Cause like my son, I take him, you know, go to the supermarket. And like a month ago, he had this little shitty grin on his face. And I said to him, I said, what? What's going on? And he goes, and he pointed at a woman's cart. And I go, what? And I look, and he had put a stack of bananas in the thing. He goes, I put those bananas there. He started laughing. I was like, what are you doing? I was like, you don't do that. He goes, I'm like, you, I put the bananas in there. And he's hysterical laughing. So I was like, ah, leave it. And we just walked away.
And your daughter's over in the corner pinning balloons on to people's shirts. Yeah, right?
Just mayhem.
Yeah. You've said like your son is a little bit more introverted than your daughter, right?
For sure.
Like, yeah. Do you see either of them kind of following in your footsteps and kind of wanting to do comedy in their life? I mean, I know they're young, but
I mean, they enjoy to make people laugh for sure. I will definitely say that. My daughter, I think, is musically inclined. I think she may be a performer in that sense. She just got on this kick now that she wants to be a DJ, which I find hysterical because she's 8 years old. She absolutely loves music. I took her to see Taylor Swift. She's blown away by like big performances. Every time I'm on stage, she loves to come out on stage. I always bring them out to say hello. They love that. But my son is low key very funny. He's very funny and his timing is unbelievable. So I'm interested to see the path they go. Cause I wasn't really that funny of a kid. I wasn't that they're funnier than I was. I didn't really come out of my shell in high school, and they actually enjoy making people laugh, and they're in a house that's full of laughter. So I think it's interesting. We'll see.
Did you find your timing by being around other people that were funny also and kind of finding that balance, or did you go to comedy shows as a kid and the
watched the comedy a lot. UCB in New York City, I used to go to the Upright Citizen Brigade shows all the time. I went to comedy. You know, I really didn't do much stand up until later in life, but my father enjoyed my first stand up that I ever watched was Tim Allen's. We used to watch Home Improvement, and we watched his HBO comedy special together. I remember it, and him and Richard Jenny were just two stand up comics that my dad loved, and I remember watching them, and the stuff was a little. You know, I was younger, but it was great. And I remember being like, oh, and then I, you know, the classics, of course, you know, Eddie Murphy and everybody. And it's just like, I think growing up, it was more like I was more into movies. And then when I became into live performance, I really got into stand-up, like, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, 10 years ago, I started, you know, enjoying stand-up specials, the Netflix specials and all that stuff. So, I think that's a fair, you know, assessment of my journey with with that kind of comedy.
You ever get to see Tim Allen live?
I have not got to see Tim Allen live. No, no,
no,
I did not.
What comedians are you looking up to now after seeing kind of some stand-up specials?
I mean, there's people that are just unbelievable at it. I mean, Sebastian is phenomenal. I find him very funny. I mean, it's hard because there's so many funny people and funny comedians that do things, and I just appreciate people. Being a performer, you appreciate people that do it. You know, like I went to a Matt Rife show recently, and, you know, I love Matt. I think he's hysterical. You know, it was just to be able to see, but to see his performance, you know, it's different. Like people, he's bringing joy. Like, and you got to just respect that to what, like people saying, oh, I don't know if he's funny or whatnot, like about anybody, not just about Matt, but anybody. It's like, yeah, he is, because people are coming out to see him. They're paying money to see him, and he's making people laugh. So it doesn't matter. It might not be your type of funny, but that's it. So I think it's hard to say, who do I think is funny? Because I think anybody that's out there doing it, I really go. But, Bert, Bill Burr, Sebastian, you know, all the big hitters, all the people that know what they're doing are unbelievable. You know, but I still always say, I think one of the funniest guys on earth ever is Sal Vulcano. No one makes me and Sal, nobody makes each other laugh like me and Sal can make each other laugh. I think there's a personal level, there's a personal relationship there. And it's also, he's just a student of comedy. He just knows how to be funny, knows what to say. And, you know, so I think that he'll always hold a special place in my heart. Like when I've seen his live shows, I popped in his live shows, he's come to mine, and it's just always fun to know that you're making each other laugh, you know?
How is a crowd reaction when there's that special kind of appearance, right? That they're not expecting.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's great. I mean, Q just came out Charleston. He came out, which is great. Murr's up next. I gotta get Murr to come out on stage somewhere, so we'll get Murr through. Sal came out in Chicago because he's doing his special there at the Vic Theater in December, so he came out to the crowd to say hello, and I wanted to make sure everybody knew he was coming. those are always great. And then I surprised at the Joker show. I came out in Boston, which was really, really awesome. That was phenomenal. Yeah, so to come out and the crowd went crazy, it was really fun.
Yeah, super cool. Now, I got to imagine in the later seasons of Jokers that there was, I mean, you guys play arenas and everything. I mean, they're huge turnouts. So a lot of people know you and you have a recognizability now. But I got to imagine that pulling off stunts, you'd have so many that you can't get too far because people recognize you. Did you run into that a lot?
Yeah, not really. It never really happened with the people that we were interacting with. The problem would be like, you'll notice there's a big time. We couldn't do two things. We stopped being teams because one guy could look like somebody, but if both of you look like somebody, then it's you. You know what I mean? Like, we could talk our way around it sometimes. But a lot of people are like, do I know who? I don't know. And you just do that. You go, I don't know you. And they'll be like, oh, and they'll just feel weird. And then the interaction is normal for 10 minutes. So they're not even realizing anything's happening. And then all of a sudden, before you're into it, it's over, you know? So that's pretty much the formula. But when we were doubles, that didn't work. The other thing was, it wasn't the person we were dealing with. It was a person that would recognize us off to the side. So like, if we're in a park, we would end up being surrounded by a production team unbeknownst to these people. And if anybody was like, oh, and they saw them recognize us, they would like headlock them, be like, no, you know, chloroform them, pull them off. Be like, no, don't ruin it. We're filming right now. So that would happen more often than not, because we had a good gauge of like being able to read people. If they recognize you, like people turn to robots, yeah. You can't.
So pull out their phone and start taking.
On the hidden cameras, we see them coming. Like we see them before they see us. We see the moment where they see the person behind the counter. So they'll walk in and turn to a robot, and they're like, oh, you'll see them be like, and they'll be like, walk over, and they're like, I'll take one hamburger, please. They just turn into like non-humans. It's like, okay, well, you know us, get out of here. You know.
Yeah.
But then we started having fun with it too. Like there were some times where we saw that people recognized me, and like there was one specifically in the supermarket. I was by the cup of noodles, and there was one person like trying to sneak a picture of us. And Sal was like, there's a guy I recognize you. And I just took a couple noodles. I turned and I threw it down the aisle at him. And I said, yeah. And he was like, ah, and he ran away. And then after like, we were hysterical laughing and he came, I was like, oh, I just wanted to take a picture. I was like, you think I don't see you? You're on camera. Like he was like, oh, it was real. That's really fun. So we started like embracing when it happened instead of like, it, but it's hard though. Like we're having a good turn and it gets ruined. Like, yeah, it's gone forever, you know.
Got to start over. Yeah, exactly. Reset. So yeah. Tell me about the decision to kind of go into stand-up comedy for yourself. Like that trust fall, I'm sure must have been pretty daunting initially. Like where did that decision come from? And really, who did you go to for advice kind of when making that decision?
I went to my life got turned upside down. I had to figure out what I was going to do to pay the bills because bills keep coming, you know? And I was like, all right, what can I do? And I still want to make people laugh. So I was like, all right, what can I do here? And I was talking with my team, and Nick Nuciforo was one of my agents, and Jack Robner, who's my manager, two great guys that have been working with me and the guys for a long time. And now me continually. They were like, you know, you should try live performance. You know, you could do stand up. You've been on stage, you're comfortable on stage. It's just a different little bit of an art form. So you got to just, you know, you'll get it, you know? So I was like, all right. So the first thing I did was hit the road with Jiggy, who's a stand-up comic friend of ours and phenomenal stand-up. Love him. He's open for us for you. Known him for a decade, you know? And then Steve Byrne. And Steve Byrne, who is a consummate, you know, and always in my corner. Just a great guy. So I was like, could you guys come with me? So they came with me to Appleton, Wisconsin. And I started there. And I did 35 minutes. For my first set,
that's a long set. Like people were like trying to pull out five, and you're like, I'll start at 35.
They're right. Well, I had a couple things. I was like, you know what, let me go. And I said, I'll just go and see what I could do. So I did that, and it was great. And then after, I remember vividly, I walked back, and Steve Byrne, who's been doing this for years, decades, multiple decades, you know, I walk back, and he's sitting there and he's sipping a whiskey, and I go, hey pal. And he just flips me off, and he's like, F you. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know how long I've been working at this thing? He's like, you're up there. You're like a natural, blah, blah, blah. So then I was like, all right. Well, I said, okay, now I'm comfortable-ish. I said, let me figure out some content. So then I started like, I needed an hour, you know, to headline. I was like, I needed an hour. I didn't want to have to bring, you know. So I started doing it more and more and more. And then within like 3 months, I had an hour. People were coming out, and I started moving from comedy clubs to theaters. So I was like, okay, so now I have a theater act. And then I've been doing that for, you know, year and a half at this point. I'll be doing it through the end of the year, and then maybe a little bit next year, and then figuring out what the next step is. But you know, it was just like, I gotta make people laugh, what can I do? And this is it, you know.
Yeah. And you hit a milestone.
It started as like a band-aid, to be honest, but then I really appreciated it. I was like, this is really, I like this. This is fun. It's different. You know, I've never been on stage. I was only responsible for 25% of the funny. If I bombed or I said something, somebody else would pick it up for me. You know, it was kind of like a lazier way to perform, if that makes sense, you know. But even though it was so much hard work and so much went into it, it just felt a little bit like, but now it was like 100% on your shoulders. If it was funny or not, if it was a great night, it was you get the accolades. If it was terrible, it was your fault, you know, that kind of thing. So you know, if you don't feel good, you gotta suck it up and go through it, you know.
yeah Have you had those rough shows that are just kind of tough to handle, and you kind of just have to figure out what went wrong and need it and reassess?
Yeah. I mean, because mentally I was going through a lot, you know? So like, there'd be sometimes where I was taking that stage, and like before it, I was just, you know, deluded, like in the back, just like trying to like get it together, you know, and get out there, you know, the mental state of, you know, trying to knowing what I'm doing and put on a face and put on a show and put out a good night for people. I want to make sure they get what they came for, you know? So there's a lot for sure. That was like very, and you're by yourself, you know, I'm used to being out there with everybody, you know, you're literally by yourself. Like I'm on the road with, you know, my friends that are open for me, but like you're literally then in the green room sitting by yourself before it's your time to take the stage. And I've never really had to experience that. So it was different for sure. But now it's embraced and celebrated, and I enjoy it very much.
Yeah. And you hit a milestone of hitting all 50 states you performed in now.
Performed like, I've performed live comedy in all 50 states, which is unbelievable.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm sure you're pretty excited to hit that milestone.
North Dakota was the last one to tick off. Fargo. Two show night in Fargo to finish it off.
Yeah, and that's where the best comedy is, right? So
my last three were Wyoming, Fargo, Wyoming, North Dakota, and Montana, I think. So all big comedy states.
yes. You hate documentaries.
Can't stand
them. Not a fan.
Can't stand them. I mean, people, come on, we get it. All right. I don't want to sit here. I'm not looking to learn. Okay. Take me away to a fantastical place. Make me laugh. Scam me. You know what I mean? I don't want to know facts and figures, dates. I don't want to pretend I'm an expert now because I watched a documentary, because that's the byproduct of this BS documentary now.
This
culture, it's like everybody knows everything now because of they watched the documentary. And some people can't wait to throw it in your face, including my friend Steve Byrne, who just loves to tell me I recently watched a doc. Every time he says it now, I just go to him and he goes, shut up, and then he'll tell me about it. And I watched this King of Kongs. It was a Donkey Kong documentary he made me watch on the road, and he just kept raving about it. And I was like, oh, I like Donkey Kong. And it was the dumbest thing. I watched it, and when it was over, I looked at him. I said, that's it? They don't tell you what? He's like, no. He goes, no. And then he Googled something to find out. I said, why are you Googling if you just watched a documentary that's supposed to tell you everything? So stupid. I hate documentaries. That's it.
What's your favorite comedy, and why is it Tommy Boy?
Great comedy, Tommy Boy. Let's talk about physical comedian, man. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, Young Frankenstein has a special place in my heart. I always love Young Frankenstein. I love Mel Brooks movies. You know that History of the World, Blazing Saddles are the trifecta for me of just like great comedies. I think Young Frankenstein's also a great movie. He did a great job as it being a film, you know. But I have some ones that like just pop off, like Gringo. I love Gringo. I thought that was such a great movie. Baby Driver, phenomenal. You know, things like that. But you know, for like as far as action comedy stuff goes, I'm a big action comedy guy now. I think that's where I like to live. I loved Spy. I thought Spy was phenomenal. Melissa McCarthy, I thought, did so well. Feig did great
with
it. You know, so like I like those kind of movies as well. You know, but I think if I had to go my favorites, like it's gonna be classics. You know, there's all the big hits you can't not love. Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters. And it's fun now because with my daughter, I'm watching these movies now. Like she was like, Daddy, can you watch something a little scary? And I said, you want to watch Ghostbusters? And we watched Ghostbusters. And it was so cool to rewatch it with her. She got scared at a couple parts, only two parts, the librarian. I don't know if you remember when the librarian turns into. And then there's a spot where Slimer comes at Bill Murray when he gets slimed, and it's like kind of intense if you're a little kid. Like she was like, but besides that, it's great, you know.
It's great to introduce them to that stuff. That's why you have kids, is for the nostalgia, right? So I can watch Never Ending Story again and the Ghostbusters, and you know, introduce them to Star Wars and all the things, right?
On the docket next is Never Ending Story. We just watched we just watched Jurassic Park, which you had never seen. So we just on the docket now is Never Ending Story, Time Bandits, and Willow. Those are the next ones that she's looking to see. So
what do they want to be for Halloween this year? Because I know you had Pennywise and Spidey last year.
Last year she was Pennywise, the psychopath. I love her.
My son was like the same thing. Like I'm like, you haven't seen it. You're not going to watch it, and we're not doing that. But he was obsessed.
I let her watch the original. I didn't let her watch the whole thing. I hadn't seen the original in a long time, so I watched it. And this is the first time you see Pennywise where it gets introduced in the thing. It's creepy and scary. And I was like, I think she could handle this. So I said, look, I'm not going to let you watch the movie. She was begging me. I said, I'm not going to let you watch the movie, but I'll let you watch and see Pennywise. And she watched it and she lit up. And then just the last part is a little scary when they show him with the teeth, you know? And she was like, then she went, okay. And I turned it off. I said, see, it's really scary. So this year for Halloween, I think we're up in the air right now. My son is obsessed with Minions and Despicable Me. So last year we were Gru and the Minions, which is funny. So I don't know where we're going to shake out, but the kids are, you know, the kids are like, we're past the point of like a family costume. And I think Bessie's upset with that, but you know, so it's like their own kind of things. I think I'm waiting to see what they come up with, but you know, my son is obsessed with this Grizzlies and the Grizzly and the Lemmings as his Netflix show. And he wanted to be a lemming from that. And it's just basically this blue like thing. So we have to like kind of make this outfit for him. He's obsessed with it right now. So that's what he might be. And then I think she wants to be a veterinarian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
The theme costumes are fun when you can do this as a family, but then they do drift away from it. You know, I mean, yeah. I was Bowie from the Labyrinth because my daughter wanted to be Sarah. And I'm Sarah has no context without Bowie. So I'm putting on the gray tights and, you know, I guess I'm doing this thing, right? Okay. I'll be the Scarecrow to your Dorothy. And,
of course,
you know, and the Joker to my son's Lego Batman when he did that phase. Right.
Nice.
You know, but they always do their own thing and I don't even know what they want to be. Their mom got them costumes and whatever. So
I'm not a big Halloween guy. Honestly, I've never really liked Halloween. So I was like, I passed that buck. I was like, you can take care of Halloween. I'll dress up whatever you want. So.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I want to be respectful of your time, but I do have to tell you, my favorite podcast is Tell 'Em Steve Dave. And you need to get back on Tell 'Em Steve Dave.
I do. I literally just talked to Q about it in Charleston. Yeah. I said, dude, I want to come back on. So yeah, I think it'll happen soon. I'm going to reach out to Johnson and be like, what's going on? I got to get on there. Johnson, I love going on that with them. Those guys are great. Johnson is just, I love just shocking Johnson because he knows me as such a kind, nice like guy. And I rip into it sometimes with them. And it's really fun.
Oh, it's great when any of you guys come on. It's just always, I mean, the show is brilliant, but when you guys come on, it just adds this extra dynamic to it. It's a rare treat. So
yeah,
get back there soon. So
you are.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Sunday for the Sacramento show. I'm hoping to get to that. So, great. Congrats on doing your own thing and getting out there and embracing the challenge and staying on the road. I mean, that's really exciting. So good.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. And this was a great interview. Really one of my faves. So thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it. You have a great day. Okay, Joe.
All right. I'll see you in Sacramento.
That was my interview with Joe Gatto of Impractical Jokers and comedy fame. He is just one of the most down to earth, cool dudes, right? Like, I love it. I love it. I love that I got the chance to spend some time with him and learn about his story, where his comedy comes from, all of the good stuff, right? That takes us to the final segment on the program, the music news. Got a couple stories to wind out the program. First up, Keith Richards. He says that a new clean lifestyle is a unique experience. He still likes to drink occasionally because he's not going to heaven anytime soon. He did an interview with The Telegraph, and the Rolling Stone guitarist said that he's trying to enjoy being straight now that he's given up drugs and cigarettes. And Keith Richards giving up cigarettes is, I think, a huge moment because he just always had them. Why is he giving them up at the final stage in life? I don't get it. I've never smoked cigarettes, never intend on doing it, but it's kind of his thing. And I heard an interview he did a handful of years ago now with Marc Maron, and Marc Maron had been sober and given up all of the demons for a long time. But when he had Keith Richards in the studio, he lit up a cigarette and smoked with Keith. So he gave up cigarettes in 2019, he explained, Richards explained, haven't touched them since. Gave up heroin in 1978, gave up cocaine in 2006. So slowly he's weeding himself off of all of the beasts and evils of the world, right? He says he spoke about the aging process, saying, I'm blessed maybe that physically this thing just keeps going. So far, I have no real problem with getting old. There's some horrific things that you can see in the future, but you've got to get there. I'm getting along with the idea of being 80 and still walking, still talking. I find aging a fascinating process, but then if you didn't, you might as well commit suicide. Okay, well, that's pretty morbid. But the Rolling Stones have announced the details of their forthcoming 24th studio album, Hackney Diamonds, that comes out October 20th, set to feature contributions from Paul McCartney, Lady Gaga, Elton John, and Stevie Wonder, among others, I'm sure. The lead single for the album, Angry, is available to stream now if you want to check that out. That is Rolling Stone news. I don't do a lot of Taylor Swift news. I don't. She's a lot. I could talk too much about Taylor Swift and I don't know much about her. But I think she's probably a really positive influence for a lot of boys and girls, and grown boys and girls as well, that she's enticed and gotten under her wing. I mean, she's the most popular musician in the world right now, right? So this news in, I was watching the Kansas City Chiefs game this past weekend, and they cut away to Taylor Swift, who was there in a box at the game a couple of times. And if Taylor Swift's in the building, there's going to be cameras on her, right? So she paid everyone's bill to clear a restaurant after attending Travis Kelce's, I don't know how to say his name, I'm sorry, Travis Kelce's Chiefs game. And so she was spotted at the Chiefs versus Chicago Bears game in Kansas City, sitting in a suite with Kelce's mom, Donna, after the game, which the Chiefs won 41-3. Both Swift and Kelce were spotted driving in Kelce's convertible. Allegedly, the two went to a restaurant where Swift paid for everyone's bill in exchange for them leaving the premise immediately. In a since-deleted TikTok video, a Swift fan claimed that Swift paid for everyone at the restaurant so that they would leave. According to LBC, the video was captioned, "Holy shit, my friend just called me. Taylor paid for everyone's meals. They had to leave. Not saying where. She was with Travis. She paid for everyone at the restaurant to leave. They were eating, and a waitress came up to them and said, 'Here's the deal. Everything is paid for, but you have to leave, like right now.'" She had been linked to Kansas City Chiefs tight end after he candidly revealed that he had tried to shoot his shot at Swift by attending one of her Eras Tour shows with a friendship bracelet that included his phone number on it, ready to hand to her. I don't know. I don't know about that move. I guess it's pretty ballsy, right? It's creative. I always say it's creative. It's cute. And Taylor Swift seems like the type of girl who would like cute. I would worry about the repercussions of getting in a relationship with Taylor Swift. Of course, your star is going to shoot to fame. Any fame you have is exponentially larger at that point now if you're seen with Taylor Swift today. And that's great and good. And I'm sure she's an amazing person, but you're going to get a song written about you, and you better be prepared for that. You don't want to be dropping your football in that court, right? So the bracelet was never given to the pop star, but he did send her a message telling her that the ball was in her court. And then in an interview that he did with Pat McAfee, he said, "I told her that I've seen her rock a stage in Arrowhead, and she might have to come see me rock the stage at Arrowhead. We'll see what happens in the near future." People will have their opinions, and Elon Musk is trying to court her to put her music on his whatever his platform is called now, X, Twitter, whatever it is. He's trying to get her to do it, and then the Swifties are standing up saying, "She knows what she's doing, Elon. You don't need to tell her that she needs to put her music on your platform, right?" This is great. Also at the game, Patrick Mahomes was interviewed by Aaron Andrews after the Chiefs blowout win, and he said, "I heard she was in the house, so I knew I had to get the ball to Travis." So he scored some points with his lady as well as on the field, right? So that's the Taylor Swift news for the week. Don't expect more of that next week. All right. This story is pretty cool. Tony Iommi made a surprise appearance at a Black Sabbath ballet premiere. Now, you heard that right. Black Sabbath ballet. I'm like, I'd never heard about this or that it was happening or in existence or what have you. But he apparently made a surprise appearance at the performance. The ballet was announced earlier this year at the Birmingham Hippodrome and will run. It's running for like a week. With a couple of other shows listed, he was involved in the creation of the ballet. So it shouldn't be such a surprise that he was there. And he worked with the director of the ballet as well. The show will include 8 of the band's tracks, plus new music inspired by them, all performed live by the Royal Ballet Sinfonia. And at the end of the opening performance, he joined the cast on stage to play guitar for the Sabbath song Paranoid, while others in attendance included the band's bassist Geezer Butler, Sharon Osbourne and Led Zeppelin's Robert Plant. Star-studded event here at the Black Sabbath Ballet, I'll tell you. That's pretty incredible. And Naomi said, it's so different. It's something that a lot of people didn't expect, including me. And he admitted to the broadcaster that he had never been to a ballet in his life, but to come in and working with these guys and seeing it, it's just fantastic. And the work that they put in is just amazing. And he told the Birmingham World that the ballet had made him look at our music differently now because it had been interpreted in a different way. So it's pretty creative, pretty creative. You never think you're going to see a Black Sabbath ballet until there's one right there. So, yeah, so that's the jam there. All right. Usher news. Usher announces new album Coming Home, arriving the same day as Super Bowl halftime show. He has been announced to be performing at the halftime show for this year's Super Bowl. And coincidentally, his first album since 2016's Hard to Love will land on the same day. And that's pretty big. I don't remember artists dropping an album on the day that they play the Super Bowl. Usually they get a lot of nostalgia type really big bands that have been around for forever, but can use that boost. And then it sends all of their other music rocketing on the charts, and they do really well for like the week or two after the Super Bowl. No, nothing compares to it. But to drop an album, a new album on that date, is a baller move, because you're going to get that. I mean, that album is going to be at the top of the charts pretty much automatically, right? People will want to hear it. People will be like, ah, Usher, yeah, him. Let's check this out. And so, so he's got some new music coming. And he's playing the Super Bowl in honor of a lifetime. So according to a listing on Apple Music, the album will feature 20 tracks with only Good Good confirmed so far. Back in March, Usher ended his 3-year hiatus with new single GLU. Since then, he's released Boyfriend, which landed in August, and Dientes with J Balvin and DJ Khaled, which came out earlier this month. Exciting times for Usher. That's a good time to drop an album. I'll just say it. Okay. Next up, Bob Dylan. And you don't expect Bob Dylan to be in the news that often, but this is a cool story where he played a surprise set with the Heartbreakers. Yes, from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers at Farm Aid. The show includes Dylan's first performance of Maggie's Farm in 14 years. So he played at Farm Aid on September 23rd, making it the first time he'd appeared at the charity concert since he helped conceive it. The annual event was founded by Willie Nelson and has taken place since 1985 and raises money to support family farmers in the U.S. The idea came about when, during his performance at Live Aid to raise money to support farmers during the Ethiopian famine, Dylan wondered whether a similar event could be worked on to support American farmers. He was criticized by that, but it seemed to have potential. Neil Young and John Mellencamp were there to help start things off as well. And so he was joined by the Heartbreakers for a 3-song set, which includes his first performance of Maggie's Farm, as I said, as well as Positively 4th Street and Ballad of a Thin Man. The set was streamed in full on YouTube, so you could check that out. But I think the record companies took the video down, so you might have to search to find it. But one other cool Dylan note that Dylan once gave Post Malone his unused lyrics to use in a song that never got completed. And that's pretty crazy, because imagine getting songs to lyrics written by Dylan handed to you, and they haven't been used in any capacity. You have the keys to this castle, and you don't jump on that. I don't know. That's pretty odd. I'm surprised that hasn't been used. Maybe he's just waiting for the right moment. But okay, one more story to finish us out here, and that is Dave Grohl. He dedicated Everlong to late Scream drummer Kent Stax. He said, "I wouldn't be here for today if it weren't for Scream." So he played Louder Than Live Festival, the Foo Fighters did, and then he dedicated that song to the drummer of his former band Scream. Now this was the drummer before Dave Grohl took over on drums, and if you want to learn more about that, you can read about it in Dave Grohl's Storyteller book. You can check that out. So He talks about his time with Scream and what have you. So, but he said, the man whose place I took in that band, Mr. Kent Stax, one of the best rock drummers, punk rock drummers of all time, he passed the other day. So this one's for Kent. And he died at the age of 61, excuse me, following a bout with metastatic cancer just one day after the hardcore band announced their first new album since 1993. So he didn't get to see that album come to light. But the album DC Special is set to feature a guest appearance from Grohl as well. And the band shared, Kent is the original heartbeat of Scream. Though we have had to continue on without him before, we have always known Kent is irreplaceable. He was one of a kind. In addition to being a truly unique drummer, Kent was also an accomplished fisherman, skilled carpenter, and an avid train enthusiast. So very nice of Dave Grohl to pay homage to those that kind of helped pave the way for him as well. Dave talks in his book about going to Scream shows. That was his first concert, was going to Scream shows, and then he ended up being in the band. And so I'm sure it was pretty surreal for him to lose someone, especially someone you don't expect to lose at that young of an age, right? So that's the sad news there, but Dave Grohl is a hero. So thank you for tuning in today. Thank you, Joe Gatto, for the great talk that we had. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed getting to spend some time with you and look forward to seeing you live here at the Crest Theater in Sacramento, October 1st. So reminder again, next week on the program, we have Michael C. Hall and the rest of the band from Princess Goes. That's a really fun one. We also have Foghat the following week. I got to chat with their guitarist, and that was a lot of fun too. We have some great content here. This is an incredible month of shows with so many great guests, and I'm super excited to be able to squeeze in an extra one. When I got the email that Joe Gatto was down to do an interview the next day, I'm like, yep, let's do it. We're going to rock this thing out, and I'm going to get it out quick so we can promote his shows that he's got coming up in the Bay Area. So thank you, Joe Gatto, for the time. Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe, like the podcast, do all the things on all the socials. And for all of us here at Concert Pipeline, I'm Steve Jones. We'll catch you next time.